British Sky Broadcasting presents Universal International's 1962 picture, Cape Fear, starring Gregory Peck as Sam Bowden and Robert Mitchum as Max Cady, directed by J. Lee Thompson, based on the novel The Executioner by John D. MacDonald, with music by Bernard Herrmann, audio description scripted by Christopher Gwinnett, and voiced by Kieran McLaughlin. A man in his 30s, wearing light trousers, a casual jacket and a Panama hat, walks with an assured and steady march through a small park. The sun shines brightly down, but the man walks mostly in the shade, occasionally adjusting his hat and sucking a cigar as he goes. He approaches an austere building with long windows and stone columns, in front of which a stream of sleek-finned cars cruise past at a measured pace. The man crosses through the steady traffic and up to the building's entrance. Two attractive young women exit the building as the man approaches. The man removes his cigar and his gaze drops to the rear of one of the women as they walk down the street. The man enters the building and into a grandiose marble lobby. He looks around. He begins to climb a set of steps. A smartly dressed woman descends carrying a large stack of books in her hands. A book falls off the stack and lands at the man's feet. The woman casts an imploring look at the man, who walks on unblinking, and almost callously as she awkwardly bends to retrieve the book. As he reaches the top of the stairs, a man in a suit walks past him. The pair briefly glance back at each other. The man in the Panama hat seems unable to conceal disdain in his eyes. The man notices a hunched black man mopping a floor.
Hey, Daddy, where does Sam Bowden hang out?
In there, sir. Court is about over, I think.
The man walks to where the cleaner has pointed. He reaches a set of double doors that bear the sign Superior Court. The man takes his long cigar out of his mouth, crushes the end in one hand, and opens the door. He removes his hat and takes a seat at the back of the courtroom.
This would make the third adjournment of this case, always due to the illness of some defense witness. Now, granted that this witness is ill, the defense still has 11 important witnesses able to testify, while the plaintiff has but one. Well, I submit that 11 against one should be enough, no matter how sickly and decrepit those 11 happen to be.
Opposing counsel will please come closer to the bench so that we can discuss this more privately. Now, Sam, you know this courtroom gets like an oven. You want a hostile jury on your hands? Now, let's put it over till fall and everybody be happy.
Well, everybody except my client. He has money due him and he's badly in need of it. More important, my chief witness is quite an old man. He might not be alive next fall.
Motion for adjournment is denied. As it is now after 4 o'clock, this trial will resume Monday morning.
Thank you.
The court rises and people begin to move out. The lawyer, Sam, shakes hands with an elderly, bespectacled man and leaves the room with a leather folder tucked under his arm. Amongst the throng of people, the man from earlier stands and returns his Panama hat to his head as he watches Sam leave. Outside, Sam bids farewell to two gentlemen, and smiling, he gets into his parked car. He inserts keys into the ignition and lays his folder on the passenger seat. The man in the Panama hat suddenly grabs the keys through the open window.
Hello, counselor. Remember me? Baltimore. 8 years, 4 months, and 13 days ago. You coming in clear now, counselor?
Cady. Max Cady.
Good. I wouldn't want to think you'd forgotten me.
What do you want?
You didn't remember me right off, did you? Well, I guess I've changed a little. Where I've been, if you don't change, they're real disappointed. You haven't changed a bit. You know something? That's just the way I wanted it. I wanted you to be just the way you were the last time I saw you.
All right, you've seen me. What's the rest?
No rest. Just wanted to give you the word. Just wanted you to get the picture, that's all.
Give me the keys.
Why not?
Now, let me get this straight. You're not still blaming me for what you did.
Still don't get the picture, do you, Counselor? Well, I can see this is going to take a little time, a lot of time.
An attractive young woman teeters past the car.
Hey, look at that, would you? Look at that wiggle. Maybe she thinks we don't know that's on purpose, but we've seen a thing or two, haven't we, Castle?
You ought to be an expert on such things, Castle. I hear you got your good-looking wife and got a daughter going to be just like it. Give my love to the family, counsel. I'll be seeing you.
Max casually heads towards the sidewalk as Sam drives away. A pretty teenage girl and Labrador dog sprint across a large garden. The girl hugs Sam as he gets out of the car. Sam puts his arm on his daughter's shoulder and the pair walk up to their house.
Well, anyway, you're 10 minutes late.
It's a mistake to teach women how to tell time. They always use it against you.
Please don't be long, Dad. I asked Betty to bowl with us.
Betty? Isn't that utterly rancid little thing that you detest with every fiber of your being?
That was last week. This week, they're inseparable.
A smiling brunette and Sam share a passionate kiss. Later, Sam, his family, and another girl are at a bowling alley. The girl bowls a strike.
Oh! I think I'll just sit here and keep score.
Cheat.
Sam's wife gets up and takes her turn. Again, with cigar and Panama hat, Max enters the bowling alley. He sits down at a table being cleaned by a waitress.
Here.
Max hangs his jacket next to a seat and watches Sam bowl a strike. Sam turns and dusts off his hands. Max continues watching as Sam's young daughter takes her turn. The waitress returns with Max's drink.
Here you go.
You're kind of fast on your feet, ain't you?
No, you have to be around here.
As Max reaches into his pocket, he notices a wedding ring on the hand of the waitress.
That ring mean anything?
Yeah, it means plenty.
Does that mean anything?
Sam slips a $20 bill onto the table. The waitress hurries away with a look of disgust on her face. Max turns back to watching Sam and his family. As Sam takes a ball in his hands, he notices Max. Sam stares frowning at Max, who sits drawing on his cigar. The pair continue to eye each other. Sam turns away and bowls at the one remaining pin on his lane. He misses by quite some way. Max chuckles at having clearly ruffled Sam and takes a sip of his drink.
Dad, you're slipping.
Usually you would have said the pin moved.
It did.
Sam's wife gets up and leaves Sam alone on his seat. Max scoops up his jacket and approaches behind Sam. Max taps Sam on the shoulder. Sam takes a moment before turning.
Nice shot. Don't mind me, counselor. I'm just getting the gander with the rest of your family. Yeah, you're a lucky man.
Did you see my strike, Daddy? Did you? Oh.
Sam turns his attention away from Max, who saunters away. Later...
Police department.
Chief Dutton, please.
Chief Dutton? He's probably left, but I'll try. Chief Dutton.
Mark, Sam Bowden.
Well, hello, Sam.
Mind if I drop over for a minute this evening?
Not at all, Sam. You know the house.
Yes, I know it. Thanks, Mark.
Right. At Dutton's house.
Well, what's on your mind, Sam?
There's an ex-convict in town. Name of Max Cady. Thanks.
He hands Sam a beer.
I think he's starting a war of nerves with me. I hope it's only that.
Well, has he threatened you?
No, nothing that would hold in court. You have to know him to feel the threat. He stopped me this afternoon after court, and he showed up again this evening at the bowling center. He followed me.
Well, why?
I was up in Baltimore about 8 years ago on a case. One night I was walking back to my hotel quite late. I heard a kind of a commotion in the rear of a dark parking lot. Sounded like someone whimpering. I ran over. A girl was being attacked. Well, I grappled with the man. She suddenly got her breath back and started screaming at the top of her voice. When he saw the police, he went completely berserk. Put the girl in the hospital for over a month. And that was Max Cady. Later on, I had to go back up and appear against him as a witness.
You feel sure that he blames you personally?
That was perfectly clear at the trial. I thought it was strange when he showed up here this afternoon. I wasn't really worried until I saw him at the bowling center. It was the way he looked at my family.
All ex-cons are required to register on arrival in a new town.
Dutton makes a call.
Sergeant, this is Dutton. Has an ex-con named Max Cady... Hold on, how do you spell that, Sam?
C-A-D-Y.
C-A-D-Y. Has he registered here in the last few days? Chances are he hasn't done it. We can run him out of town on that. Thanks, Sergeant. Hold on. He's smart. Registered yesterday. What address did he give? I see. Switch me to Lieutenant Gervasi. The address is over at the dock area. Sounds like he's short of dough. We can get him on vagrancy. Pete, I want to pick up on Max Cady. The registration has a description. All right, fine, you call me back, yeah?
Thanks, Mark. My family's home alone. I better be going.
You have a dog, don't you, Sam?
She couldn't bite through a donut, but she's a good barker.
Well, that's good enough. I'll call you when to pick him up.
Well, I hope I haven't put you in all this trouble for nothing.
Well, Sam, I hope it is for nothing.
Good night. Good night.
Music emanates from a bar situated above lapping waves. Inside, it is busy. In his usual attire, Max sits at the bar, slightly open-legged, drinking a beer. A woman plays a piano around which people are drinking. A glamorous-looking brunette sits between two men. Max watches her as she giggles and coquettishly fingers a bottle. As Max turns away, the woman looks in his direction. The man sitting with the brunette notices her staring at Max. Max eyes the woman lustily. The man looks perturbed. The brunette turns slowly back and resumes conversation. Max continues to watch as the woman drinks and jokes around. Other people now stand between Max and the brunette, but this doesn't stop their eyes meeting once again. The people in the way clear, and the woman stares hard at Max, chin dipped, eyes cast slightly upward through long, dark lashes. The brunette looks up as a man in a suit and hat walks in, followed by a uniformed police officer. They approach Max at the bar. The man in the suit slaps Max's arm.
You all Max Cady?
Well, I could be. What's your problem?
We want to talk to you outside.
Start reaching for those, you better call for the riot squad, man. I don't mind a little talk. I just don't like being pawed, you know?
I'll come back with a change later.
Max tosses some money onto the bar and takes a gulp of his beer. He strolls over to the brunette, eyeing the man sat next to her.
I'm going to give you just 1 hour to get rid of your friends.
Are you trying to pick me up?
Yes.
Yeah. Cockily, Max raises his eyebrows. He walks out of the bar, tipping his Panama hat lower over his eyes as he goes. The brunette gives a sultry smile as she watches Sam leave. Later, Max is at the police station.
Now, you know I'm not drunk, but I'm a cooperative guy. Here. See that card? John W. Moss, M.D. You want to give me an intoxication test? Bring that gentleman down here. I didn't spend 8 years in the can studying law for nothing. I've got a legal right to be examined by my own physician. Or didn't you boys know that?
Well, never mind. You'll be sober enough when you leave here anyway.
Dutton leaves the room.
Thank you.
Max takes his doctor's card back from the detective.
Come on.
Dutton returns with Sam.
Well, well, well. We seem to be seeing quite a bit of each other today.
Let's strip down these shorts, Cady.
Right.
Max takes off his jacket and begins to undress.
I suppose you thought I was going to object to a strip search, didn't you, Chief? No, sirree, not me. Like I said, I'm a cooperative guy. Yeah, you better check that shirt. I got a couple of jolts of horse stashed under the collar.
Let's make with the bands.
Coming up. Coming up.
What are you doing in our town?
Well, they told me it was a pleasant climate. Plenty of boating on the river. A lot of fine stand-up citizens like our friend here, the council.
I figured.
Maybe just the place for me.
How much money have you got?
Well, here's my wallet. Why don't you check for yourself, Chief?
Now wearing only white shorts and hat, Max draws in his chest and stands straight and defiant.
$7. Well, now, that's just not enough, Katie. I'm charging you with vagrancy unless you're 100 miles away from here by morning.
Would you look just a little harder, please, Chief, sir? A little black bank book in there. Read what that says.
This one?
That's it.
Well, $5,400. Where'd you get it?
You notice it's in a bank right here, deposited this very day. You saw that, didn't you, Chief?
I asked you where you got it, boy.
Well, now, that could be my business, couldn't it? Would you advise me to answer a question like that, Counselor?
You'd be wise to answer it.
Well, that's the kind of advice I like, because, like I said, I'm a cooperative guy. Now, you check with the escrow officer in the First National Bank in Baltimore, Maryland, he'll be happy to tell you exactly where that money come from.
Anything?
Not a thing.
Nothing, Chief.
Come on, Sam.
Come on, Sam. You're kind of friendly, ain't you? Nice, tight little corporation. Mark, old buddy, I don't like that man's face. Throw him out of town.
Why, certainly, Sam. Anything to oblige you.
But I'm going to tell you something, mister. You're going to be old and gray before I ever leave this town.
I'll give you a warning. Stay off my property. Day or night.
Later, Sam's large garden and house. Inside, Sam sits at a desk. His daughter flicks through a book nearby, then looks out of the window.
Hello.
Sorry I couldn't phone you sooner, but I was out in the case. Anyway, I got hold of the escrow officer out at his home early. Katie sold the old family farm for $5,900 net. He's in the clear, Sam.
When are you going to release him?
I've already done it, a couple of hours ago.
Hold on, Mark. What's going on with Marilyn?
I don't know. I can't see her in the bushes.
Where's your mother?
In the kitchen, I think.
You still there, Sam?
Yes, Mark.
Just remember that there are legal ways that convince Mr. Cady that this can be a pretty poor place to live in.
We'll do all we can. I don't have to tell you to keep your eyes open.
You can bank on that. Thanks, Mark.
Marilyn, stop barking. Maybe she caught a rabbit.
You know that Marilyn never caught a rabbit in her life.
If she did, do you suppose she'd eat it?
She doesn't know that rabbits are to eat.
Sam! 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 Sam, come quick! It's Marilyn. She's having a fit.
Sam and his wife run up the garden. Marilyn, the dog, lies on the ground under some trees.
Get the car started.
Sam scoops up Marilyn.
Dad, what's the matter with her? Dad, what's the matter? What's the matter, Marilyn? Oh, Dad.
Open the door. I'll get in the back. You get in the front.
Maybe we better not take her.
Can't stay here.
At the vet's.
10-1 it was strychnine, Sam. You couldn't have saved her if you'd been twice as quick. To me, it's the same as murdering a human. It's a shame Nancy had to see it.
She was meant to see it. Thanks, Doc.
Sam leaves the room. Nancy, his daughter, stands up and looks anxiously into the room. Later at home, Nancy absentmindedly picks up a book and sits down. She looks distraught and struggles to fight back tears. Her mother, Peggy, comes to comfort her.
Don't let Daddy see you like this.
But this is when I always feed her.
Sam somberly enters the room.
I'd like to speak to both of you. I'm not telling you this to frighten you. But I want you to be careful. I think you're old enough to be told why. 8 years ago, I was a witness against a man, and he was sent to prison. And the thing is, he's out now, and blames me for his conviction.
He's the one that poisoned Marilyn.
Maybe, but there's no proof of that.
But you know he did.
Thinking isn't knowing. Just be careful. This is a big man. He has dark hair. He smokes cigars and usually wears a Panama hat. I'll get you a police photograph of him. Until we have this thing under control, I want you never to leave this house or the school grounds, except in your mother's car.
Nancy stares straight ahead, upset and in shock. Peggy breathes awkwardly, looking nervous. Sam stands over Nancy. His face briefly scrunches into a look of love and concern.
There's nothing to worry about as long as you're careful. The police are going to keep a very close watch on the house, and the chances are that he's just trying to scare us anyway.
Peggy sleeps uneasily, replaying a conversation with Sam.
A man like that doesn't deserve civil rights.
Well, you can't put a man in jail for what he might do. And thank heaven for that.
You think we should go away for a while? Take Nancy out of school?
Well, I did think of that. But Katie can afford to go any place we can go.
What are we going to do about that man?
I don't know yet. I know one thing. Mustn't let him frighten us. That'd be just playing his game.
She rolls over and wakes up. She notices the bed is empty next to her.
Sam?
Peggy gets out of bed and switches on a lamp. She retrieves a nightgown from the back of a chair and slips it on, looking concerned. She opens her bedroom door. The corridor outside is in darkness. She opens another door. A small single bed is empty, the bed sheets thrown aside. Nervously, she creeps along the hallway and begins to descend the staircase. Her slender hand slides down the banister for support as she goes. As she reaches the bottom, the outline of a figure in a hat appears. She switches on a light to reveal Sam's jacket and a hat hanging from a stand. A door closes. Nancy appears.
What are you doing down here?
I was hungry and I heard Dad.
Where is he?
He's talking to policemen.
Outside.
Probably just drove along the alley and tossed the meat out.
Well, thanks for coming by.
Good night.
The policeman drives off. Sam returns inside the house and embraces Peggy.
Sam, don't you ever do that to me again.
Now in a courtroom, a guard hands Sam's colleague a note on a piece of paper.
And what were your physical findings, Dr. Pearsall?
Physical findings were a 1-inch shortening of the left leg.
And the x-ray?
The x-ray revealed that though the fracture healed, there's marked indication of degenerative joint disease.
And by degenerative joint disease, you mean arthritis?
Yes.
And what was your diagnosis?
Diagnosis was hip fracture with destruction of the joint surfaces, which caused the pain and restriction of motion.
You then performed surgery upon the plaintiff?
Yes.
I have a model here, which should make the operation easy for the jury to understand. What is it?
Chief Dutton wants to see you in his office.
Right now?
Right now.
Your Honor, I'll be excused for a few minutes. Mr. Garner will continue the questioning.
Permission granted.
Keep him on as long as you can. The jury likes him.
Oh, yes. Yes, it is clear to me. That's fine if you want to handle it that way. All right, then you tell the county it's their case, that's all. Sam, I'm sorry to pull you out like this, but this could be serious for both of us. Your friend Katie turned up with Dave Grafton.
Oh, that's it. Well, go Got himself the right man.
Not for us. Now, you know what he's like. He's one of these ardent types. You slap a cigarette out of some hoodlum's mouth, 5 minutes later, he's down to Mayor's office yelling police brutality, rallying the Bleeding Heart Squad.
Sam and Dutton enter into an office where Max and his lawyer, Grafton, wait.
Hello, Dave.
Good morning, Sam. I hope you haven't come down here to dispute me on any technicalities.
No, I'm here as a citizen, not as a lawyer. Don't worry about technicalities.
Thank you, very kind. First, let me say that my client does not want to make any trouble. He merely wants to put an end to this persecution.
What persecution is this?
Well, I believe your records will show the following. Detention in jail last Friday night. Oh, I agree that you are technically within your rights. I merely mention this as the beginning of a pattern.
What pattern?
Oh, I intend to establish this pattern. On Saturday, Mr. Keeter's room was searched. His car was searched.
Well, did he protest the search?
During this time, my client was made to feel he was suspected of poisoning a dog. A truly despicable act causing serious damage to his reputation.
Now, hold on right there. I can guarantee you that none of my officers mentioned this to anyone but Katie.
Perhaps. But people do become curious when a citizen's room is searched by the police. Now, on Monday, my client was picked up and interrogated by the police on suspicion of armed robbery. On Tuesday, my client was forced to stand in a lineup on suspicion of purse snatching. This constant attention by the police caused his landlady to ask him to vacate the premises. He was forced to find other, more expensive lodgings.
All right, what are you getting at? What's the point? Don't the police have a right to interrogate a suspect anymore?
Sam, you know, if anybody had told me a week ago that you were capable of a remark like that... let me continue with the pattern. On Wednesday, he was picked up twice. First on suspicion of burglary, second on suspicion of grand theft auto. His new landlord became aware of this in some manner. And again, Mr. Cady was forced to move. His present lodgings are squalid and uncomfortable.
Today is Thursday. You must be about finished.
For the moment, yes.
Then what is this pattern you're talking about?
Well, I'm sure that Mr. Bowden here is still enough of a lawyer to see it. My client is an ex-convict. He's been constantly harassed by the police. Subjected to extreme mental cruelty and public degradation. He's even been denied an adequate place to live. To be very blunt, gentlemen, my client has been thoroughly rousted. And isn't it also a fact that with manpower as short as you say it is, that officers are assigned day and night to guard the premises of one private individual who happens to be a personal friend of yours, this without any evidence of danger?
You're referring to my house?
Yes, I am.
Then I ask... who furnished you with that information?
Dutton looks at Grafton, who squirms uneasily. Sam looks at Max, who smiles slightly and raises his eyebrows.
Well, I think you will find that this is a matter of common knowledge in the department.
Grafton, I want you to listen to this. I don't owe Sam Bowden any special favors, nor do I give any. In each 24 hours, there's been less than 2 hours devoted to guarding his house, and I'm prepared to substantiate that. Now, are you finished?
That depends, gentlemen. It depends wholly on the treatment that my client receives from now on. Come, Mr. Cady. Gentlemen.
Grafton gets up brusquely and heads for the door. Max stands slowly.
I'll see you around, Counselor.
Max and Grafton leave.
Well, now you can see why I wanted you to hear this, Sam. I can't do anything more without an overt act.
Like a neat little murder?
Well, you show me a law that prevents crime. All we can do is act after the fact. You remember the Hoffman murder? Before she was killed, Mrs. Hoffman came up here week after week telling us that her husband was going to do it, and I believed it. But I couldn't arrest a man for something that might be in his mind. That's dictatorship. Now, Sam, you're a citizen. Would you want it any other way?
Torn, Sam ponders.
What am I supposed to do? Pull up the drawbridge? Sit home with a loaded gun, have the groceries dropped in by airlift? That's kind of an artificial way to live, wouldn't you say?
Sam, I'm going to make a humiliating suggestion. And it's humiliating for me. You hire yourself a private detective. Now, that's all you can do. You get Charlie Seavers. Now, if anyone can dig up something we can act on, he can.
private detective.
That's right.
Mark, I'm not going to go into the I am a taxpayer routine, but is that the best you can do? You're telling me to go hire protection?
Well, it's a hell of a note, isn't it? Either we have too many laws or not enough.
Two cars head along a road. In the lead car, Max drives. The brunette from the bar sits next to him. She smiles and checks her makeup. Max notices that he is being followed. In the rear car, a man drives stiffly, a cigarette clamped between his fingers.
Why are we going this way?
Better scenery.
What would you know about scenery? Or beauty? Or any of the things that really make life worth living? You're just an animal. Coarse, lustful, barbaric.
Keep right on talking, honey. I like it when you run me down like that.
Max, Katie, what I like about you is you're rock bottom. I wouldn't expect you to understand this, but it's a great comfort for a girl to know she could not possibly sink any lower.
Come on, tell me some more about that time when you were queen of the Baal Prophet's ball.
Later, it is dark outside. The man who was following Max goes to a public telephone.
Operator, police department. Give me Sergeant Elkins. Hello, Mike. This is Charlie Sievers. I'm at the corner of Sherman and DeSoto. If you want something on Max Cady, he's up in a room with a girl who just blew into town a few days ago, Diane Taylor. He's in the room with her now, 2041 Sherman. She's over 18, but you can still get him for lewd vagrancy.
A shirtless Max walks through a dark hallway and into a bedroom. Max walks behind an ornate screen that partitions the bed from the rest of the room and seems to cage him in. Max looks down at Diane, who lies on the bed in a skimpy negligee. The covers have been removed, offering a view of Diane's long legs. Max looms tall and predatory over the bed. He massages his knuckles slightly as he observes. Diane softly opens her eyes and looks up at Max. She shuts her eyes again, and Max wanders around to the end of the bed. As Max stalks slowly around, Diane opens her eyes again and turns her head slightly to look at Max. Her expression becomes uneasy, and she starts to raise herself up. Max continues to look down at Diane, his stare becoming increasingly cold and menacing. His fist begins to clench slightly. Diane panics and runs from the bed. Max grabs her roughly by the arm and throws her back down. Outside, Charlie, the private investigator, greets a policeman dressed in plain clothes.
That's the room, second floor.
The detective, a uniformed officer, and Charlie move quickly into the building and up to the second floor. They reach the room and try the door.
Open up! Open up!
The two policemen barge the door open and rush in. They begin to look around.
There's a back door open here and an outside stairway.
The detective notices something on the floor. He walks around the bed to find Diane slumped with a sheet wrapped around her. He touches her gently on the wrist, then cradles her head in his hand. Diane suddenly comes to. Her petrified face is cut and bruised. Charlie smokes as he paces outside the room. The officers come out to him.
Something kind of weird's happened to her. I can't get her to spill a thing. Maybe you can.
Charlie nods. He extinguishes his cigarette, exhales, and then takes a moment as he approaches the door. Charlie tentatively enters the room. Diane sits on the messy bed with her legs drawn in as she dabs at her wounds. Charlie sets his hat down on a small table.
Miss Taylor?
You're probably hurt worse than you realize. Would you like me to get a doctor? Mm-hmm. My name is Charlie Seavers. I'm a private detective. And I can help you. No need to take a beating like this lying down. A man like that has no right to walk around free. You've got the law on your side. Why not use it? Now, no one blames you for being afraid of Max Cady. This one's different, and you know it. He beat you up tonight. He'd probably do it again tomorrow night. He might even kill you.
Charlie sits on the bed beside Diane. She turns away looking pained and troubled.
Let me take you down to the Homicide Bureau. I'll show you photographs of girls who got mixed up with men like Cady. And Miss Taylor, it'll make you sick. But you'll realize how lucky you are to be alive. Now, why not protect yourself?
Still avoiding eye contact, Diane rises from the bed. Her anguished face seems to briefly flash with determination. She picks up a telephone and dials.
Taxi cab promptly to the corner of Sherman and DeSoto. I want to go to the bus station. Right. Quick, please.
Well, leave town if you have to. And as I said, no one will blame you. But before you go, would you help us put this man away? All you have to do is come down to police headquarters and sign a complaint. Won't you do that? If not for your sake, for somebody else's?
Check myself. Nobody can protect themselves against a man like that. Scared? Can't help me.
But I can. Now you file an assault charge and Cady will get 6 months in jail.
6 months. And after that, when he walked out of this room, he said to consider this only a sample. From my limited knowledge of human nature, Max Cady isn't a man who makes idle threats. Anyway, you said you weren't a policeman. What do you want?
I have a client. Mr. Bowden, Mr. Sam Bowden. Cady has threatened his wife and his daughter. Never mind the reasons. Mr. Bowden is worried, and I can't blame him. You know Cady.
Still not fully dressed, Diane packs hurriedly.
Do you believe that I could ever... in my whole life, step up and repeat to another living soul what that man, what he did? What about my family? I'm someone's daughter, too. What about the newspapers in my hometown? Do you think I could bear to have them read about?
Physically and emotionally drained, Diane sits back down on the bed. Later, Charlie and the policeman stand outside the room. Sam enters the building and jogs up the stairs. Charlie approaches him.
I'm afraid I got you down here for nothing. She won't talk and she's leaving town on the next bus.
Diane comes out carrying a suitcase. The four men stare at her as she quickly shuffles, head bowed, towards the stairs.
This is Mr. Bowden. Once more, before it's too late, would you reconsider?
Distraught and frightened, Diane looks up at Sam. She hurries past him and begins to descend the staircase. She stops and turns around.
I'm sorry. Really, I'm sorry.
So what do we do next?
Well, drop tailing him, you're wasting your money. He expected to be covered. And any time he wants to shake loose, he'll figure a way.
Then what do you suggest?
Change his mind. Get in touch with a guy named Jepson. Alex Jepson. He's got some rough friends along the waterfront. And for the right price?
Are you kidding? I can't consider that.
Okay. So you're a lawyer, and you believe in due process. But it's your family, not mine. A type like that is an animal, so you've got to fight him like an animal. That's my advice.
Two people on water skis are pulled across a stretch of water. People mill around on a wooden jetty. Many recreational boats are moored. Nancy lies across the prow of a small boat that Sam and Peggy are painting. Wearing a t-shirt and small shorts, she shields her eyes and looks as a larger yacht casts off.
When can we have one like that?
It's on our fiscal program for the year 1980.
What's fiscal?
That's what we haven't got.
I've been looking for an excuse to quit this. I finally found it. I forgot to buy any paper plates and cups.
Mother, you did that on purpose.
You can't convict me on mere suspicion.
Well, if one rat can leave the ship, why not two? Here, you take over for a minute.
Now, where are you going?
I have to get some more thinner from Tony.
Well, if we're a family of rats, I might as well leave, too.
No. You represent a giant stride in evolution. And don't drip any of that on the deck.
Crowds of people walk along the dockside or stand admiring the scene. Max appears wearing a striped t-shirt and the usual Panama hat. He stands and looks down at the water.
Hey, Nancy, ahoy!
Ahoy!
Boss, going to the picnic?
Yes, if we ever get started.
Okay, we'll go water skiing, okay?
Okay.
The family wave to Nancy as they set off across the water. Nancy grabs a rag and begins to polish the deck of the boat. Max stands just above Nancy. He swigs from a can of beer as he stares down at the girl. Sam appears from a shop clutching a tin of paint thinner. Just as he is about to return to his boat, he notices Max. Sam marches angrily up to Max.
What are you doing here?
Why, I'm just drinking this beer, Counselor.
Do it someplace else.
So the man sells me a beer and I figure maybe I might rent me a boat now. Just how many laws you got against that, Counselor?
Look, Katie. Maybe you can get away with dog poisoning. Beating up on a little drifter, like Diane Taylor. Don't push your luck with me.
Max looks down at Nancy.
Say, she's getting to be, getting to be almost as juicy as your wife, ain't she?
You rat.
Brimming with rage, Sam throws a series of punches at Max, who doesn't fight back.
You're not going to push me in anything, Counselor. Now, you've just had your innings. I'll make my stroke later.
Nancy runs up towards the men. Sam turns and notices her. He walks over to Nancy. Max addresses the crowd that has formed.
I guess you saw that, didn't you? Never laid a hand on him. Just standing here minding my own business, a man walks right up and starts beating the... How about that?
Max runs the back of his hand over the side of his lip. Nancy looks wide-eyed at him.
That's him, isn't it?
Sam takes Nancy by the hand and leads her away. Nancy can't take her eyes off Max. Sam, still enraged, barely glances towards him. Next, a tree-lined street. Girls carrying bags and books file out of a large, grand-looking building. Nancy is among them. She waves goodbye to some friends and approaches a car. She looks surprised to see that the car is empty. She drops her books onto the back seat and then climbs into the front, looking uneasy. Water sprays from an ornate fountain in a park. A familiar figure in a Panama hat walks past it. Back in the car, Nancy looks around. Max saunters through the park. Nancy turns on the radio. Nancy leans forward as she peers up the street. Max continues his steady pace forward, smoking a cigar as he goes. Nancy looks fearful as she notices Max heading towards the car. Still some yards away, Max stops and blows out cigar smoke. Nancy watches as he returns the cigar to his mouth and once again begins his slow march towards the car. Nancy jumps out of the vehicle in fright and she backs against a tree. Max continues walking at the same steady pace. Nancy looks around and then dashes back to the school doors. She frantically tries them, but they are locked. Max has now reached the school gates. He stands, looking through the bars of the iron fence, as he watches Nancy panic, then dash around to the side of the building. Max grins as he watches her run. Not knowing where to run, Nancy grips onto the fence and stares out. She turns and continues the run, finding a door into a classroom. Nancy pushes desks aside as she hurries through the room and into a basement area. She hides in the shadows behind a large machine. Her eyes register terror as she hears the approaching footsteps. A man enters the classroom and closes the door behind him. Nancy suddenly rushes down some more stairs and into a locker room. Trembling, she hides between rows of lockers. As the man begins to make his way down into the locker room, Nancy runs to a window. She struggles and can't pull it open. She notices a catch. She adjusts it and opens the window, squeezing through just as the figure arrives at the bottom of the stairs. Another man, not Max, looks towards the open window. Nancy runs quickly back through the gates and straight into the arms of Max. Smiling, he looks down. Nancy runs from his grip and into the road. A car knocks Nancy down. The driver gets out and goes to her. A crowd begins to form. Max smugly looks on.
She just ran out in front of me.
Nancy lies in the road. She looks over at Max, who begins to walk away. Peggy arrives back at the car. She sees the door hanging open and the radio on. She notices a commotion occurring around the corner and runs towards it. Later, Sam rushes into his house and up the stairs. He goes into a bedroom where Nancy lies in the bed. Peggy sits next to her.
How is she?
She's only bruised. The doctor gave her a sedative. I'm sorry, Sam. I thought the store would only take a second.
Sam looks down contemplatively. His face becomes angry and decisive. He marches from the room. Peggy watches him leave. She looks concerned and follows after him. Sam strides through a hallway and sits at a desk. He removes a handgun from one of the drawers. Peggy walks in as Sam stands and stuffs the gun into his trousers. She looks horrified and takes Sam by the arms.
Sam, are you out of your mind? But Sam, he didn't do anything to her. He didn't hurt her.
I'll wait until he does.
Will you please listen? It'll be murder. You know that.
Do you want to ruin all of us? Isn't that exactly what he wants? Oh, in the name of heaven, pay him off, buy him off, give him some money and he'll go away, but don't do this to us. If you get into that car, I'll call the police. You won't get halfway into town before they pick you up.
Peggy runs back inside and picks up the telephone.
Get me the police. Please hurry. Could I speak to Chief Dutton? Mrs. Bowden. Bowden, Mrs. Sam Bowden. Yes, it's urgent. It's very urgent. Will you please hurry?
Sam appears in the doorway looking downcast. He walks slowly over to Peggy and takes the phone from her.
Hello, Mark. I'm sorry, it's a false alarm. Everything's all right. No. I'll talk to you later. Right. Goodbye.
Wearily, Sam sits on the desk. He leans towards Peggy, who holds him close. Max enters a bar. He wanders through towards the back. He grins and adjusts his cigar. Max leans against a rail and looks at Sam, who is seated at a table just below, waiting. Slowly, Max approaches Sam's table and sits.
You're sweating a little, Counselor. Well, I know how it is. I sweat, too. For 8 solid years, I sweat. You gonna buy me a drink?
Waiter?
That'll be double, waiter. 12-year-old. My rich cousin here says nothing's too good for old Max.
How much do you want, Katie?
How's that again?
You heard me. I said, how much do you want?
Counselor, you got to forgive me. I'm a little slow after my first drink. I assume we're talking about dough, is that right?
That's right.
Well, that certainly is heartwarming. The poor ex-convict comes to a new town looking for a fresh start, and one of the leading citizens steps right out and offers him financial help. That's enough to renew your faith in human nature. It sure is. Hey, Buster. You got some salted peanuts? I saw it in the shell.
Not in the shell.
Okay, forget it. I seem to have to educate this town.
Come on, let's have the answer.
That takes a little figuring, Counselor. What do you reckon 8 lost years is worth? You reckon a court could fix a value on that?
Stick to the point. How much?
That's too simple. I like to put values on things. Like the value of 8 years. Value of a family. Interesting calculations, wouldn't you say, Counselor? You're right to pass that stuff up. Man told me it was bad for you. Hey, Buster, a friend liked to buy me another drink.
$10,000 now and another $10,000 over the next 2 years, providing you keep out of the state.
Suppose I come back after the money runs out.
I'll give you a simple answer to that one. I'll kill you off.
Well, let me see. $20,000. Yeah, that's less than $3,000 per for my 8 years. Counselor, I don't believe you heard of the Minimum Wage Act. Now, just for fun, let's go back to talking about values. Value of a family. You probably didn't even know I had a family, did you? One wife and one kid. That's what I had when you sent me up. She dumped me. Never even visited. I signed the divorce papers.
What did you expect?
Oh, no, it wasn't that. It was the prison rap that she couldn't take. She just couldn't stand the disgrace. And that was your doing, Counselor, not my doing. She married a plumber. They wound up with a litter of kids. My own kid doesn't even know me.
So when I got out, I went to visit her. The plumber was off plumbing someplace, and the kids were all in school. She picked up a poker, tried to hit me over the head with it. And I took it away from her and calmed her down. And she crawled in the car. I took her to a little spot about 50 miles down the road.
Why tell me all this?
Because I want to tell you all this. That night, I made her call up the plumber and tell him she was taking a little vacation from him and the kids. Then I made her sit down and write me a love note, asking me to invite her on a second honeymoon. She dated it and signed it. Made her write a lot of dirty words. And I occupied her time for 3 days. You begin to get the picture, Counselor?
I'm getting it.
Good. And then I told her that if she ever blew the whistle on me, I was going to mail a photostat of that note to the plumber. I pumped another quart of whiskey into her, threw away her dress, threw away her shoes, and gave her a fair chance to work her way home.
Charming story. What is it supposed to prove?
Counselor, for a bright fellow, you sure are slow getting the picture sometimes. You see, I burned for 8 years. And now I've got what you might call peace of mind about my dear, darling wife.
So, no deal.
You're getting warm, Counselor. You know, when I was in the bucket, all I could think about was busting out and killing somebody. I wanted to kill him with my bare hands, slow. Every single night for 7 years, I killed that man. And on the 8th year, I said, oh, no, that's too easy. That's too fast. You know, the Chinese death of 1,000 cuts? First, they cut off a little toe, then piece of your finger, piece of your ear, your nose. And I like that better.
A little toe, I'm to understand, child. That's it, isn't it?
Now, that's your train of thought, Counselor, not mine.
My train of thought. Shocking degenerate. Well, I've seen the worst. The dregs, but you. You are the lowest. Makes me sick to breathe the same air.
Sam flings some money onto the table and walks off.
Hey, Buster. I believe my cousin left me enough to buy me another blast.
Max sinks his whiskey. Sam arrives home to Peggy.
There's no war of nerves. He won't be bought off. It's Nancy he's after. And he'll get to her sooner or later. Unless I change his mind.
I just won't believe it. I just can't. You said yourself he's too clever to take chances. How could he even touch her without taking a chance?
What would you do if she were attacked? Have him arrested?
How can you ask such a thing? Of course. What's the matter with you?
Would you have him tried? Pull him into court? Naturally, he'd deny the whole thing. That means that Nancy would have to testify. You never watched a child testify in such a case. Thank God you haven't. It's the clinical reports and the questions and the detailed answers that she'd have to give. She'd have to give them, all right, because he'd deny it and we'd have to prove his guilt.
A beast like that, who'd believe him?
No one. No one at all. But that wouldn't spare her the questions. And Katie knows that. He knows that we'd never put her through an ordeal like that.
There's got to be something we can do. There just has to be.
There is. There is.
Down at the waterfront, 3 men set upon Max.
Hey,
They fight in the shadows under a wooden pier. Max fights back and floors two of the men. The third pulls out a chain-like weapon and strikes at Max with it, wounding him in the stomach. Max disarms the man and chases after him. Later, Peggy lies in bed reading.
Hello.
Hello. Well, is this Mrs. Bowden? Yeah, I knew it was. I just wanted to hear your voice again.
You know something?
For 8 years, I dreamed about a chick with a voice like that.
Just whispering in my ear. Real close.
Don't.
Same baby.
Sam takes the phone.
Shut up, you.
Counselor, you really stepped on it this time, didn't you? I don't know what the Bar Association thinks about its members compounding a felony, but I do know what the law thinks about it. You just put the law in my hands, and I'm going to break your heart with it. Ain't nothing can stop me.
You understand that, don't you?
That house and that car and that wife and kid, they ain't worth nothing to you now.
Now you listen to me. You asked for this. You asked for it. And if you don't get out of...
You're wrong, man.
I'm going to show you what it's like to be wrong.
Speaking about your...
wife and kid, I got a little caper planned for them. Remember the story I told you about my old lady? That was just laughs, Counselor. That was kid stuff. I got something planned for your wife and kid that they ain't never going to forget. They ain't never
going to forget it. Neither will you, Counselor. Never. You'll never forget it.
Later that night.
I can't believe we're standing here talking about killing a man.
There's still a few ifs, ands, and buts about it. I can't go into this alone. I'll have to have help. Of course, he wouldn't fall for it here. He knows we're too much on our guard. But if you get the idea that we thought she was safely hidden away someplace.
She? You can't be talking about Nancy.
Don't worry. I won't go into this until it's airtight. I won't make a move that'll put her in any danger.
That won't stop the terror of it. She's only a child.
And what about the terror if he catches her really alone?
Next, Sam heads into an almost empty courtroom. Max's attorney, Dave Grafton, is there.
Sam?
Morning, Dave.
Sleep well last night?
Well enough.
Oh, you needn't bother to open that. You tried your last case in this state. Your three hired hands landed in the hospital last night. One of them thought he was going to die, and he talked. Oh, the judge wants to see you.
Good, I want to see him, too.
He's going to tell you I'm instituting disbarment proceedings against you.
You didn't waste much time, did you?
Oh, I'm just getting started, Sam. See, the Committee on Ethics meeting up the state capitol right now. They work real fast. You better have your story ready to tell them by tomorrow.
You don't think the committee will wait to see if I'm convicted of anything?
The committee is only interested in keeping the legal profession beyond reproach. After what happened last night, I'm going to be real interested to see how you answer to that one.
Dave walks superciliously away. Sam's colleague arrives.
Good morning, George.
Morning, Sam.
I only came down this morning to tell you that I have to turn the case over to you. I'll break the news to the judge.
Sam walks off. Later, he strides down the street. His pace slows and a grim, thoughtful look comes over his face as he massages the nape of his neck. Next, he is with Dutton and Charlie at the police station.
Have you gone out of your mind? You've come to the wrong man, Sam. Dave Grafton was in here not 10 minutes ago. You haven't got a leg to stand on. Jepson's in there right now being interrogated. And if he talks, I'm going to have to arrest you before you leave the building.
If I'm arrested, who's going to protect my family? You?
That's below the belt, Sam. Grafton's watching every move I make.
The only answer to Dave Grafton, the Ethics Committee and all the rest of it, is to show Katie up for what he is.
You can't do it with a stakeout. Katie's too smart for that.
but I've got it carefully worked out. Now, there's a houseboat. It's up on the Cape Fear River. Has a shore cabin, a telephone. It's isolated, hard to find. The perfect place to hide my family.
No place is perfect. Do you expect Katie to believe that you'd leave your family alone anywhere?
That's the one thing that had me stop. And this morning, Grafton handed me the answer on a platter. He's forcing me to fly to Atlanta tomorrow to appear before this committee. And you can bet that his friend, Mr. Cady, will be tailing me clear to the airport. But the moment I get to Atlanta, I'll hire a car and cut across to the coast. I'll get a boat at Hennessy's Landing. In a few hours, I'll be at the houseboat with Peggy and Nancy, and Cady will think that I'm sweating it out in Atlanta. The next step is to lure him up there when we're ready for him. That's your department, too. He knows you're tied in with the case. He'll follow you when you leave town if you make it look right.
He steps ashore and you shoot him. Is that it?
That's about it.
You can't shoot a man for simple trespass. Not anymore. Katie's built up too good a case against you.
It'll be more than simple trespass, but I won't wait until he wipes the blood off his hands, either.
Now, hold on. Just hold on. I've listened. Now you listen. You're going to do a foolish thing without help, and you're going to need lots of it. Now, I can't help you if I wanted to. That's county territory.
Mark, you know the sheriff. You're going to stand on ceremony at a time like this. All you have to do is pick up the telephone.
And do what? Ask for half a dozen deputies to help a man that I should be arresting?
I don't want half a dozen deputies. That'd be a sure way of tipping off Katie and Grafton. It'd be all over town in no time. One is all I can risk. One is all I'm asking for. Do I get him?
Well, this time next week, I may be back pounding a beat.
A small motorboat cruises along an expanse of water. It disappears briefly under a bridge. A sign on the bridge reads, Cape Fear River. Sam pilots the boat. Peggy and Nancy sit next to him. Thick foliage rises up on banks around the river. The boat travels slowly and Sam consults a map.
We should have gone to the left of this island, about a mile back.
Peggy nods and Sam turns the boat around. Later, a large houseboat is moored at the end of a wooden jetty. Sam comes out of the houseboat and steps down into the small motorboat which is tied up next to it. He collects some suitcases and takes them aboard the houseboat where Peggy and Nancy are unpacking provisions from a box.
Are we going to be completely marooned? I mean, no visitors at all?
You didn't say anything to Betty.
No, I didn't say anything, just so honest.
Well, have a nice voyage to nowhere. I'll see you in a day or two.
Don't get lost on the way home.
Nancy smiles nervously and takes a large jar of pickles out of the box and sets them down on the side. Sam and Peggy drift outside and stand facing each other on the jetty. Sam takes Peggy's hands in his. He looks back towards the houseboat.
Do you think she'll be able to stand all this shattering peace and quiet?
Don't you worry about Nancy. That's pioneer stock.
They hold each other and kiss firmly. Sam pulls his eyes tight shut and grips Peggy. He looks down at her and flashes a reassuring smile. Sam steps down into the little boat and Peggy unties it.
Cast off.
Sam sets off, taking the boat alongside the houseboat. Peggy watches from the jetty, then walks around the deck of the houseboat until she reaches the stern where she stands and watches Sam leave. Next, passengers board an airplane.
For Atlanta, now boarding at gate 3. Attention, please. Passengers for Atlanta. Flight 403 now boarding at gate 3.
Sam shakes hands with a man and walks through gate 3 towards the plane. Max sits in his car nearby watching. He picks up an envelope and gets out. Looking back towards the plane as it begins to taxi, Max wanders thoughtfully into the terminal building and up to a desk.
Say, I have a brief here for Sam Bowden. Samuel Bowden?
Yes, sir.
Was he on that flight 403?
Yes, sir, he was.
Now, I don't know whether to mail it to him or not. You don't have any idea when he'll be back, do you?
Josephine. He did make a return reservation, sir. 6 p.m. on Thursday.
Well, then I guess special delivery will get it to him, all right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Max turns and walks away with a self-satisfied smile. Later it is nighttime. The houseboat remains moored. Inside, Peggy and Nancy play backgammon. Nancy suddenly appears frightened and looks sidelong towards a window. Peggy follows the direction of Nancy's gaze and turns off the radio.
It's just a log bumping.
No, not that. Listen. It's a boat.
There are bound to be boats.
We didn't hear any last night. It's coming closer.
Peggy's eyes widen. She calmly gets up and turns out the lights. Peggy then takes a small handgun out from a drawer. Nancy stands nervously stroking the top of a chair as she looks down at the gun in her mother's hand. Shadows play ominously over the walls. Nancy watches as Peggy, holding the handgun, creeps through the semi-darkness towards the door. Peggy stands by the door listening intently. She looks towards Nancy. A small amount of light shines in through a window, revealing her face frozen with fear. Peggy moves closer to the door as she continues to listen. Peggy and Nancy both look terrified. Very slowly, Peggy begins to open the door. She uses both hands to steady herself and avoid making a noise. As she looks out through the gap in the open door, a man climbs out of a boat onto the jetty.
Peg? Nancy?
It's Daddy! Oh, darling, thank God it's you.
Oh, Dad.
This is Mr. Kersak of the sheriff's office.
How do you do? Oh,
come on in.
Later, inside.
Don't you think it's about time you were getting ready for bed?
Where am I going to sleep?
Here with your mother. Mr. Kersak and I will sleep on shore.
Won't you have some more coffee, Mr. Kersak?
Don't mind if I do.
Will you excuse us for a few minutes?
Sure thing.
Kersak politely rises as Sam and Peggy leave the room and step out onto the deck. They both look in different directions and Peggy wrings her hands nervously. Sam turns towards Peggy, who remains facing away and looking down.
So far, so good. We're all here. Katie thinks I'm in Atlanta. You can still say no if you want to, Peg. Nothing will start unless I call Charlie Severs.
Peggy finally turns to face Sam.
Call him.
Peggy's fear shows through her resolve. Sam takes Peggy by the arm. Later, Charlie is on the phone.
Well, I tailed him until he spotted me, Mr. Bowden. Then he checked to see your car was home and Mrs. Bowden's car was gone. Looked at the mail in the box, but didn't take any.
Then he tried the boat basin. Tony told me a boat hadn't been out all week.
But for the rest, well, I guess we've missed so far. Because if he's been tailing me, I haven't been able to spot him.
I still think he will. You're the only lead he has. Start things moving tomorrow.
Right.
Peggy nervously touches her hand to her mouth. They both look grave as they turn out the light. The next day, Max stands behind a tree in the garden of Sam's house. He produces a pair of binoculars and observes Charlie collecting items from the maid and loading them into a car.
Hello,
Max watches as Charlie gets into the car and drives off. Charlie's car pulls into a gas station. He glances down the road behind him as he gets out. He hurls a cigarette to the ground and leans back against the car, looking both ways along the stretch of road. He goes to a payphone. Sam and Nancy are playing table tennis when the phone rings. Sam puts down his bat and answers.
Yes? Well, looks like we're striking out. I'm on 257, about halfway to cross this landing, and absolutely no sign of him.
Tell me to keep coming or go back and try it again.
Could he have switched cars?
Sure, he could have switched cars, but I've been keeping my eye on the drivers.
What do you say?
Well, if he hasn't been following you at all, trying it again won't work either. Come ahead.
Seven to nothing.
Temporarily. Only temporarily.
A small but busy area by a riverside. Cars are parked up and men carry crates and fishing poles. Boats sit by the riverbank or cruise slowly down the water. A small van pulls up. Max gets out of the back of the van and heads to the driver, producing some money. Max has his eye on Charlie, who is hiring a small boat from an elderly man.
All them islands look alike. Just follow this and you can't miss it.
Okay, thanks.
The man hands Charlie a piece of paper. Charlie gets into the boat and starts the motor as the man unties it. Charlie turns the boat and begins to make his way down the river, scanning the bank as he does so. From a safe distance and shielded by a tree, Max watches as Charlie heads off. Now Charlie's boat is moored next to the houseboat. He hands some items to Peggy and Nancy, casting a look over his shoulder as he does so. He then restarts the motor and heads away. Keeping close to the river's edge, Charlie motors along. He looks at the dense forest that surrounds the river. Max sits in a small rowboat, peering through a dried-up bush towards Charlie. In the boat, Max secretes himself amongst overhanging trees and sticks that provide enough cover and allow him to watch Charlie heading off at some pace down the river. Max looks in the direction that Charlie has come from. He looks back and sees Charlie disappearing from view. Max picks up his oar. Charlie continues to motor down the river. He looks up at the trees sweeping downward towards the river's surface or rising high up from it. Now nighttime at the houseboat. Peggy is inside drying dishes. Inside the house on shore, Nancy sits changing records on a small player that rests on the table tennis table. Underneath the house, which rests on stilts, Sam hides in the undergrowth looking towards the houseboat. Sam watches the hypnotic sight of the water as it plays on the side of the boat. His face is grave and he grips a handgun. Kursak waits in hiding under the jetty, right on the edge of the water. He looks out at ripples on the river's surface. A bush gently waves as the figure of Max creeps slowly through. Max dips quickly and quietly through the undergrowth and hides in the shadows at the river's edge where he can see the houseboat on the opposite bank. Max takes out his binoculars and watches Peggy at a window still drying dishes. He lowers the binoculars, then turns towards the house on shore and peers through them again. Nancy can be seen through a small window. Max turns the binoculars and his attention back towards Peggy. He lowers the binoculars once more and moves away. Back inside the houseboat, Peggy is chopping fruit. In the house, Nancy nervously fiddles with a table tennis bat and ball. Max continues to stalk through the bushes. Once again, he looks through his binoculars. He watches as Nancy bounces the ball. Sam remains in his hiding place. His eyes dart around, looking into the surroundings, but nothing can be seen. Max, still kneeling in the bushes, takes off his shirt, shoes, and hat. Moving like an alligator, Max crawls forward over a log. He looks hungrily towards the house and houseboat, then slips himself quietly down into the water and begins to swim across the river. Nancy continues to bounce the ball. She drops it. As she retrieves the ball, she stumbles into a waste paper bin. Sam is startled. He looks upwards towards the house. Nancy returns to bouncing the ball. Sam seems to realize that it was a false alarm. Max continues to swim unseen through the water. Kursak remains in his hiding place. Max emerges soaking onto the bank of the river. He creeps quietly through the bushes. Sam waits patiently under the house. He is still unable to see anything untoward. Unblinking, he keeps his eyes turned on the surroundings as he swats a fly from his face. Max continues to creep through the bushes, getting closer to the house. He carefully pushes aside some branches to afford a view of Nancy, still sat inside, bouncing the ball. As Max contemplates his move, Kursak suddenly swats a fly on his face. Max turns and looks in the direction of the sound. Kursak lays down his gun, swats his hat around his head, then dips his hands into the water. Max begins to move towards him. Kursak rubs mud over his face and head, then sits up. Max suddenly grabs him from behind in a chokehold. They sink down into the water. Max continues to apply the hold tightly around Kursak's neck until he is able to submerge his face under the water. Kursak struggles, but Max overpowers him and keeps him submerged.
Without a mark on you. Just got too big for your pants.
Max releases his hold, and Kursak's lifeless body floats in the water. Max now tugs at a rope attached to the houseboat. He frees the boat from its mooring. Inside, Peggy looks up startled. Sam's eyebrows raise up as he watches the boat. He starts to get up from his hiding place. Sam moves slightly closer as he notices the houseboat start to move. He dashes quickly onto the jetty.
Kursak!
Sam jumps down to Kursak's hiding place. Max starts to haul himself out of the water and onto the boat. Sam looks around under the jetty.
Kursak!
Sam wades into the water. His legs run into something and he looks down. Sam scrambles under the water and pulls up Kursak's body. Sam notices the houseboat starting to move away. He drags Kursak's corpse onto the bank. On the boat, a doorknob turns. Peggy stands backed into a corner in fear as the door opens and a shirtless Max walks in. He shuts the door. Peggy appears terrified. Max snarls.
Nancy! Nancy!
Nancy opens the door to Sam.
Tell the operator to call the sheriff's office. Send some men out here, fast!
Sam rushes away and Nancy dashes to the phone. The door swings open behind Nancy. She returns and shuts it. Sam runs away from the house and through the dense greenery. He runs along the bank as the houseboat moves down the river. Sam wades into the water as the boat crashes into the opposite bank. On the boat, Max stands in front of Peggy. They stare at each other. Fearful, Peggy begins to back away. Max moves forward with a surly grin. Peggy backs into a work surface. Her hand reaches blindly backwards towards a plate of eggs and a knife. Just as she is about to reach the knife, Max grabs her arm.
Oh, now, come on. You ain't that scared. You come right down to it, what is there to be scared of?
Now, look, you're not a foolish man. You're very clever. You never make mistakes. You don't take chances. If you touch me, you'll go back to prison for life.
You want to make a little bet on that?
But you will. I'm not like Nancy. I'm not afraid to testify. I swear it. You've got to believe me. I'm not afraid.
And you're a lawyer's wife. Don't you understand?
Max crushes an egg in his hand. It splashes across Peggy's arm and chest.
That with consent, there are no charges against me. Now, look.
Max wipes his hand over Peggy's egg-covered chest.
I want you to hear this. It's going to save a lot of messing around. Look! I was going to go for Nancy. But I can always make it with Nancy, you know, next week, next month. Wait a minute now. You propositioned me. You instead of Nancy. And I'll agree never to see you again, all right? Unless, of course, you want it. And that's how you give your consent.
And that's not consent, it's blackmail!
Peggy struggles. Max restrains her by holding the straps of her top.
Reasons don't make any difference. You look that up. As far as blackmail is concerned, you only think I'm going after Nancy. Come over here! You're just playing it safe. Now, your husband is going to appreciate your noble gesture, but he ain't never going to forget it.
No! 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 Please! Please!
So,
please! 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 Please!
So, all in all, I don't think you're gonna say too much about this, are you? You're not gonna talk about it, are you?
Fire!
They struggle again. Max repeatedly slaps her face. Sam bursts through the door of the houseboat. He finds the first room empty. He tries a door which is locked. Sam kicks the door open and looks around. He barges open another door into a bedroom. He looks around but can't find anyone. Holding his gun and breathing heavily, Sam stands in a doorway.
Peggy?
Sam notices Peggy lying on the floor.
It's Nancy. He only wanted to get you away from her. It's Nancy. It's Nancy.
Operator?
Nancy tries to get a line on the phone. She looks up as Max approaches the door and tries the handle. Aghast, Nancy slowly lowers the phone away from her face as Max again tries the door.
He's here. He's here. He's here. He's here.
Nancy shouts into the phone, then flings it down and runs from her seat. Max smashes out a pane of glass from the door. Nancy cowers in a corner of the room as Max reaches through the smashed glass and unlocks the door. He strides in. Max closes the door. Nancy trembles, her cheeks wet with tears. Max walks into the room. Nancy stands up and moves out of the corner. The table tennis table separates them. Max stands smiling. He takes a deep breath as he stares at Nancy. Max leans over the table as if getting ready to pounce. Both Nancy and Max keep their eyes fixed on each other. Max straightens up. Max pushes the table towards Nancy. She picks up a poker from the fireplace. Max stares coldly down at the small figure of Nancy. She cries and trembles. Nancy weakly holds the poker out in front of her. The long, heavy object shakes in Nancy's hand and serves to highlight her weakness and fragility. Realizing her inability to fend off Max, Nancy begins to lower the poker. Max takes it from her and grabs hold of Nancy. He puts his hand over her mouth. Max begins to drag Nancy towards the door, his large hand clamped tightly over Nancy's delicate face, which is pressed against his damp chest. Although Nancy tries to struggle, Max is easily able to hold her hands together. Max leads Nancy outside. He takes her down the steps of the house and into the surrounding wooded area. Sam quickly swims and reaches the bank. Drenched and still holding his gun, he runs from the water. Max suddenly grabs Sam in a chokehold. They begin to struggle and Sam's gun falls to the ground. Sam pushes back against Max and tries to loosen the grip from around his neck. Sam kicks against a tree. Both men fall down and the hold is broken. Sam and Max exchange a series of fierce punches. Max lands a hard punch on Sam, sending him sprawling back into the water. Sam begins to get up. Max launches himself into the water and at Sam. They continue to fight. Both men thrash around in the river. Max once again applies a chokehold onto Sam. Max forces Sam's head under the water. Sam's hands claw at Max's shoulders, but Max holds him under. Sam forces himself up and gasps for air. Oh, Max raises Sam's head out of the water. Sam's eyes are closed and he is limp. Max lets go of Sam, who slides back underwater. Max wipes off his face. Suddenly, a hand underwater picks up a rock. Sam springs up and hits Max over the head with the rock. Max sinks under the water. Sam scrambles up onto the bank and runs towards the house. He finds Nancy in the bushes.
Nancy, get out of here.
Run hard. Run and hide. Run!
Max surfaces from under the water. Sam takes Nancy by the arm and runs with her through the bushes. Sam runs back towards Max, who stumbles as he tries to get to his feet. Max slowly gets out of the river. He stands amongst the trees as he looks around and breathes somewhat woozily. Sam hides and watches. Max picks up a heavy piece of wood from the ground. Max moves forward. He stands on a small wooden gangway holding his makeshift club. He looks around for Sam, who hides in the bushes just ahead. Max continues to walk forward. He nears Sam's hiding place. Max looks into the bushes. Sam looks out. Max's face twists into an enraged frown as he sees Sam. Sam begins to run. Max catches up with him. Max strikes out at Sam but misses and takes a chunk from a tree. Sam begins to run again. Max gives chase. They both sprint through the undergrowth. Max looks around for Sam, who has disappeared. Sam kneels on the ground. He looks back and can see Max looking around. Max stares out into the foliage. A bush starts to twitch slightly. Sam crawls slowly along the ground. Max lowers himself down as he tries to spot Sam. Sam continues to crawl. He spots his gun on the ground. Max stalks forward, brandishing his club. Sam gets closer to the gun. Sam lies flat as he hears the branch snap. Max walks onwards. Sam inches his hand towards the gun. Max clutches his club and looks downwards towards Sam. Sam's hand nears the gun. Max moves forward towards Sam. He strikes down at Sam's hand just as he reaches the gun. Sam shoots Max, who drops his club and stumbles to the ground. The two men face each other. Sam keeps his gun trained on Max.
Go ahead. Go ahead, I just don't give a damn.
Sam stares hard at Max. He then rises up slightly and straightens his shoulders.
No. No. That would be letting you off too easy. Too fast. Your words, do you remember? And I do. We're gonna take good care of you. We're gonna nurse you back to health. And you're strong, Katie. You're gonna live a long life in a cage. That's where you belong. And that's where you're going. And this time, for life. Bang your head against the walls. Count the years, the months, the hours, until the day you rot.
Sam stands high over Max, who is slumped, defeated on the ground.
Sam!
Sam, Nancy, and Peggy sit on the back of a small boat. Peggy comforts Nancy, who is wrapped in a blanket. Sam sits stiffly with an impassive expression. The boat makes its way along the river. The end.